Our next case is 14-718, State of Ohio versus Jeffrey C. Arnold. Mr. Murray.
May it please the court, I would like to take 3 minutes for a rebuttal, if I could. This case comes out of the Third District with regard to a majority decision with one dissent, and actually there was only one opinion in the majority. The second judge indicated that he concurred in judgment only. It comes out of the Fostoria Municipal Court concerning an incident on March 25, 2013 in the Arnold family residence located in Fostoria, Ohio. From that incident, Jeffrey Arnold, the son, was 28 years old at the time, he was charged with domestic violence against his father, Lester Arnold, and on June 18, 2013, a trial was held before the Fostoria Municipal Court in which a police officer indicated that he observed Lester Arnold come out of the house, out of the garage, and had no signs of any physical harm whatsoever, no abrasions, no bruises, no swellings, no cuts, nothing to indicate the causing or attempting to cause the elements of physical harm. Also at that trial, the wife of Lester Arnold, who's the alleged victim, testified that she did not see any signs of any physical harm upon Lester, and that Lester has a temper, and sometimes he goes up like a rocket. Those were her words. And then, with regard to the first witness that the state called, that was Lester Arnold, the father. And I believe he was in his late 50s at the time. And he attempted to invoke his Fifth Amendment privilege. He did invoke it, but the prosecutor in the court said do you understand you don't have the right to refuse to testify? He said he'd like to plead the Fifth and is refusing to testify. This is from the transcript. And then Mr. Arnold responded, I have a right from self-incrimination under the Fifth Amendment, and I do have a right to refuse to testify, to which the trial court then indicated, you also understand, you also may be held in contempt for failing to answer. And that would lead directly to my proposition of law number one, which was a first assignment of error in the appellate court, that the trial court abused its discretion and the prosecuting attorney wrongly and improperly advised the state's own key witness that he had no right to invoke his privilege under the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution.
Counsel, if we can clarify that for a second, that was the prosecutor.
That was the prosecutor, telling
the witness, you don't have a right. It wasn't the judge telling the witness, correct?
That is correct. But what the judge then is followed up, and the judge had indicated that, do you also understand that you went after Mr. Arnold invoked his Fifth Amendment privilege, I have a right from self-incrimination under the Fifth Amendment, and I do have a right to refuse to testify. The judge indicated that you understand you also may be held in contempt for failing to answer, whereby...
If we continue, I have looked at the transcript. If we continue with that line of questioning, did the witness not continue to invoke his Fifth Amendment right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So in the end, did the trial court preclude him from exercising his right not to testify?
No, the trial court indicated that he still had to answer questions. And also, the trial court made no specific inquiry as it's required to do, that it It's basically the trial court should have conducted a hearing, an in-camera hearing, to make a particularized inquiry, deciding in connection with each specific area that the questioning party wishes to explore whether or not that privilege, the assertion of the privilege, is well-founded.
Is there a case that you can point us to?
That would be United States versus Moreno. That was in the reply brief of amicus curiae from the Ohio Association of Criminal Defense Attorneys. The trial court just can't have a blanket, well, you understand you can be held in contempt when the person asserts the Fifth Amendment privilege.
Counsel, he was asserting the Fifth Amendment because of statements he may say would tend to incriminate himself. Isn't that what that Fifth Amendment means?
That's what he's stating, yes.
Okay, and then he ended up reading a statement that he had previously given the police. He didn't offer new testimony. He read from a statement. Is that right?
He read from a statement over objection with regard to he previously had testified he couldn't even remember having written that statement.
Okay, but he didn't deny that he wrote that statement.
No, he didn't deny that he wrote it.
All right, so he reads the statement, and there's nothing in that statement that incriminates the father, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so in essence, he didn't have any statements that would tend to incriminate him.
Well, that's part of the point of the argument here, Your Honor. It's that if a person is invoking his Fifth Amendment privilege, if that privilege is denied, and then the person goes on to that gives basically the defendant standing to challenge to have the issue of a Fifth Amendment privilege as an issue for reversal.
Because, but it's not the defendant's Fifth Amendment right.
That is correct. But in asserting that that was denied by the state, in other words, by the court denied the Fifth Amendment privilege, when the witness goes on to then testify, and he didn't even testify, he just had that statement read, which he could not remember writing. He had that read, and that would tend to go on and prejudice the defendant.
Counsel, I guess that's where I'm having a problem with the argument here. You will agree that the Fifth Amendment is not automatic in a court of law, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So if someone asserts the Fifth Amendment, they have the burden of demonstrating to the court that if I testify, I will be incriminating myself, not another, but myself, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
There's nothing that happened in this trial that incriminated the person who was asserting the right, was there?
There was not, but the trial court should have conducted an inquiry with regard to whether or not that would or would not happen, rather than giving a blanket assertion. As I would note that as the state specifically...
Well, for example, in this particular case, it was a written statement, so there was no mystery as to what was going to be said, was there?
No, Your Honor, but I couldn't cross-examine on it. Why? Because Mr. Arnold indicated that he couldn't remember having written it. And therefore, that was the basis...
Well, is that a basis here? Is that a basis for incrimination? Is that you couldn't cross-examine because the witness's response was, I don't remember saying this. He's not denying that he said it or that he, you know, wrote it, but he doesn't recall it. So he reads from it.
And the inference and innuendo is there clearly for the court to imply that it's basically incrimination against the defendant.
But wait, but that's not the test for the Fifth Amendment.
I understand, but with regard to, I respectfully submit that it is the test with this particular instance of someone who invokes their Fifth Amendment privilege and is not inquired to by the court as to the specific the specificity of what their testimony.
Well, let's talk about what the Court of Appeals said, and I'd like to know your response to that. That's why we're here today.
Mm-hmm.
To the contrary, it would appear his only reason for invoking the privilege was in order to not testify against his son, Arnold, as Lester did not want Arnold charged in the first place. Is that factually accurate?
No, I don't think that's necessarily factually accurate, because only two people were present at the time of the incident, Lester Arnold and his son. And his wife, Lester Arnold's wife, had indicated that Lester has a temper and that he goes off like a rocket at times. And Lester Arnold, when he testified, he indicated he suffers from post-traumatic stress syndrome and was on a variety of medications that affected his ability to recall matters. And therefore, I would respectfully submit that there was a question with regard to whether or not Lester Arnold's statement was indeed accurate, if he couldn't have even recalled even and writing it out to the officer. I would note, Your Honors, that with regard to this, also in the dissenting opinion with regard to the appellate court, the judge had indicated, as the state specifically used Lester's silence in conjunction with his statements, that he did not want his son in jail to imply that he was refusing for an illegitimate purpose, and as a tactic to admit prior written statements, that written statement, States Exhibit A, into evidence instead of eliciting testimony, it prejudiced the defendant. That's another aspect to this. When Lester Arnold was repeatedly invoking his Fifth Amendment privilege, and the court was denying him the opportunity to do that.
Counsel, if we look at the end of the transcript, though, where the trial court renders the decision, the trial court says, even disregarding the testimony here today of Mr. Arnold, the court finds that there's been ample evidence of guilt. So mm-hmm. at the end of the day, mm-hmm. didn't the court expressly say, I didn't consider that testimony?
Well, without that testimony, without that written statement, there would be no, there simply wasn't any proof there to show, not beyond a reasonable doubt, to even show there was an offense committed. According to the police, they didn't see any injuries on Mr. Arnold. And according to his wife, she didn't see any signs of physical harm or attempt to cause physical harm. Rather, this was a written statement, and that's all there was, basically, with Mr. Arnold repeatedly invoking his privilege of his Fifth Amendment, and that it did prejudice my client, because, again,
Did you raise that as a proposition of law? Sounds to me like a manifest weight kind of question, and do we have that in front of us?
No, we don't have that in front of us, but we have a question of, with regard to the issue number two, it denied a fair trial because of the trial court's repeated pattern of demonstrating that it had prejudicially presumed the defendant appellant's guilt throughout the course of the trial.
Did you raise the Crawford issue? And is this, I know the Court of Appeals did discuss Crawford, mm-hmm. stating that the defendant had the right to cross-examination, and effectively, are you arguing that by asserting a Fifth Amendment right, the witness was preventing you from cross-examination?
Yes, and that's raised in the proposition of law number three, that by allowing the state's key witness, the trial court reversibly erred by allowing the state's key witness to read his written statement, which he made to the police, over defense objection into evidence at trial, thereby denying defendant appellant's fundamental right to confront witnesses under the Sixth and Fourteenth Amendment. And the state, because the state's key witness had already invoked his Fifth Amendment privilege and had testified that he couldn't remember what had happened and therefore he couldn't be cross-examined or otherwise confronted about his written statement. Even when repeated invokings of his Fifth Amendment privilege, Lester Arnold indicated, one of my questions, did he try to cause you physical harm? He says, I can't remember, but I don't think he did. And given that, I would respectfully submit that the propositions of law should be well taken with regard to that the Fifth Amendment assertion, it did prejudice Mr. Arnold. And I would again indicate that he was hurt by these repeated, my client's right to a fair trial was hurt by.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. My name is Tim Hoover. I'm the Director of Law and Chief Prosecutor for the City of Foster, Ohio, here on behalf of the people of the state of Ohio.
Counsel, will you move your microphone a little centered? Thank you.
Very good, Your Honor. First, before addressing the appellant's propositions of law, I want to address some of the factual statements made by opposing counsel and that were not brought out and that are clearly reflected in the record. First and foremost, with regard to the testimony brought out at trial as grounds for sufficiency for conviction, there was plenty of evidence outside of Lester's statements written in oral at trial, and those had to do with statements from Connie and from the fact that when the police showed up, Lester Arnold, the father, ran to police. He said, in that excited state, I was choked, my hair was pulled. The defendant was nowhere to be found. He ran out the back door. I respectfully request this court to affirm the Third District Court of Appeals in addressing appellant's propositions of law.
Counsel, let me ask you a question along those lines. I'd like to see where the common ground is this morning. You will agree with me that when somebody raises their Fifth Amendment rights and they're on the stand in a court, that a big issue has been raised, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you not troubled by the fact that the trial court, rather than explaining the parameters of the Fifth Amendment, merely said, well, you'll either testify or you'll be held in contempt of court? Don't you think that falls a little short of the constitutional standard we'd like to see applied?
I think in response to Your Honor's question, I would note that there's well-settled case law that the third party does not have the right to invoke, or the defendant in this case, the defendant appellant, does not have the right to invoke a third party's.
Fully understand that, and everyone in the room agrees with that proposition of law. Was that explained to the witness?
It was not, but I don't think it needed to be in this particular case because.
So it's okay for us to know, but the witness doesn't need to know?
I think it was apparent from the questions asked of Lester from the assistant director of law that clearly there was no possibility that he could be charged with a crime, that his answers would furnish a direct link in the chain of evidence from those questions.
So a father and son get into a fight in the dining room and the father's on the stand and he's saying, I'm asserting my Fifth Amendment rights. No possibility of prosecution there.
Now this court has held going back to 1909, and so has higher or the U.S. Supreme Court, that the bald assertion of I'm invoking my Fifth Amendment rights here are just not sufficient. There has to be more. And from the context of
maybe
this
you're
particular
misunderstanding
case,
my question. Does the father have Fifth Amendment rights when he is in a fight with his son and he's on the stand and they're asking him about the incident? Does the father have Fifth Amendment personal rights? He's been in a fight with his son.
I think in general, the answer to the question would be yes. But in this particular case, given the record, the factual record that we have, Your Honor, the answer would be no. We have clear indication from Connie Arnold that Lester was trying to de-escalate the confrontation. He left the table. He walked away. Jeffrey was following him. We have the excited utterance from Lester to the police, who he ran to. We have his written statement, even if it was, you know, improperly admitted into testimony, shows that it was consistent that Lester had no fear of incriminating himself. And also, I would point out that appellant makes a great deal over the fact that there was a continuous objection, I don't think a proper objection in this particular case, as to Lester's Fifth Amendment rights.
Would it not be a defense that the father had been an aggressor, and could not defense counsel have brought that out on cross-examination?
Certainly, that could have been, and I think that
why can't the father then assert a right against self-incrimination, not knowing what the defense counsel may ask him?
Well, I think in this particular case, had those questions specifically been asked, but the questions—
You have to go that far.
I think so. I think the questions that were asked by the assistant director of law were so mundane and so clearly not gauged.
We don't know about this, what the state was inquiring. It would have been obviously the defense counsel.
That's correct.
And I would have probed the conduct that would have precipitated the defendant's behavior.
Yes, Your Honor.
That may or may not result in a Fifth Amendment opportunity for the father to have incriminated himself. And so, theoretically, why can he not assert that right? And why does the court inject itself into the position of an advocate and say, I will hold you in contempt, you will read that statement? Where does a trial judge get that kind of authority to become an advocate?
I think, Your Honor, it's axiomatic that trial courts are in the best position to see, hear, and understand the testimony that is being proclaimed by a witness at trial. Trial courts are given great deference.
Trial courts should not know what witnesses are going to testify at trial.
No, that's true. But by the context of the exact questions here, Your Honor, when the assistant director of law asked, why were the police at your house, then Lester jumps to the conclusion, I invoke the Fifth. Clearly, from that context, there was nothing to suggest that Lester was going to answer in an incriminating way. If the question had been asked, as Your Honor poses, well, Lester, who is the initial aggressor here, that probably would have been a red flag, and I would admit that that would have been the point where Lester had probably more of a basis to invoke that right. But the point here I want to bring out that opposing counsel didn't state to the court is that despite the continuous objection to this so-called improper line of questioning by the assistant director of law, you have the fact that defense counsel did in fact stand in front of Lester and did ask questions, did cross-examine him, did elicit testimony that was helpful to his client.
But counsel, when you talk about red flags, and what we're concerned about here is procedure for other cases. Once a witness says, I invoke my Fifth Amendment rights, or raises the Fifth Amendment under Huffman versus United States, that's the red flag to the trial court to find out and to inquire in camera or, you know, out of the presence of a jury, if it's a jury trial, to find out if it's perfectly clear from careful consideration of all the circumstances that the witness is mistaken or the answer cannot possibly have a tendency to incriminate. And that's within the language of Huffman, which says you err on the finding of privilege. You err on the side of finding of privilege. And only if you find that Huffman's standard is satisfied do you require the witness to testify. Isn't that what we're concerned about here, the procedure that was used once Fifth Amendment was stated?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think that's exactly the issue here with this particular issue.
But we didn't have the trial court doing any of that.
I don't think the trial court needed to do that because the questions that were asked preliminarily of Lester Arnold by the prosecuting attorney clearly did not have the intended effect of incriminating.
What about
Lester.
once the statement is made, I'm invoking my Fifth Amendment, or I know my Fifth Amendment rights, doesn't the trial court have the obligation to find out if there's any reason why that is, you know, a spurious invocation? Otherwise, there's no questions.
Yes, I would think that the trial court obviously does have to address that important issue, and the trial court in this case did address that issue.
Where?
I think by hearing the testimony and the questions that were asked by the prosecutor to Mr. Arnold, to Lester, certainly, as I said, the context of the direct line of questioning of the state's complaining victim here were so not geared towards, you know, any sort of possible incrimination. It would take a long line of inferential leaps to go from the questions that were asked to a suggestion, wait a second, we need to, you know, shut the proceeding down and go have an in-camera interview.
Mr. Hoover, is this a statewide problem in domestic relations litigation that we have victims either refusing to testify or claiming this privilege and hence losing these kinds of prosecutions? Is this a statewide problem for us or no?
Your Honor,
what is your experience tell
I
us?
Come from a small rural community of about 13,000, and we see this fact pattern of domestic violence come up quite a bit. And even when I was an assistant county prosecutor, I found out real fast how difficult these cases are when you have your complaining victim that has some sort of close relationship with the offender and maybe have some sort of reticence in testifying. So yes, if the court increases the burden in this case by accepting the appellant's propositions of law, I think that would open Pandora's box and would affect a great many cases throughout this state in making it harder to ascertain the truth and to pursue justice for victims.
Counsel, isn't it it may be better practice for the court if the witness says Fifth Amendment, the court just says, let's let you talk to counsel and do it that way, just to make sure that there's no problem with an individual incriminating him or herself.
I mean,
it doesn't take that long to bring an attorney in, and for purposes of Fifth Amendment discussion with the witness, determine if this is an accurate plea or not.
I think Your Honor would certainly, in a situation like this, it would be, I think, an unusual legal proposition to say as a bright line holding that, you know, in a situation like this, the trial court must always, you know, allow the witness to speak with counsel. In this particular case, that wasn't needed. And even if the trial court had, well, Lester, you can go speak with counsel, to whom would he have spoken with? I don't think
this is municipal court. We have attorneys in municipal court all the time, public defenders, individuals seeking, you know, appointments, and this could be a five minute delay in the proceedings.
Well, I can speak to our court, and in our court, certainly we don't have a public defender system, at least in Seneca County. Frostory's in Tri-County City, and this was a Wood County case. There is a Wood County public defender, but adding that procedural burden with these facts would have been unnecessary and would have a proposition of law that I am not familiar with in other cases from this court.
Well, counsel, I guess that's why we're here today, isn't it? As Justice Lansinger indicated, we're really dealing with 11 million Ohioans rather than Mr. Arnold and Mr. Lester.
Of course.
And you seem to be dismissing the suggestion that if a witness is invoking a constitutional right, somehow we don't have 5 minutes to slow things down, get him some counsel. Even counsel, as Justice O'Donnell suggested from the bench, the trial court said, let me explain to you what right you're asserting. Is that what you're saying? None of that happened here.
I think
it just seemed that the expediency seemed to have carried the day.
I think that in this particular case, with these facts, that the trial court made the correct decision in not increasing the burden in shutting down the proceedings.
Why was he refusing to testify then? I may have to reread this record. Why was he refusing to testify?
I think it is.
I don't care what you think. I'm sorry. I mean that respectfully. Why was he refusing to testify?
I think he was more concerned with son incrimination instead of self incrimination.
That would be nice if it was in the record, wouldn't it?
Well, on cross-examination, Lester did say to defense counsel, despite the continuing objection on the Fifth Amendment grounds, that in fact, I don't think, but I can't really remember that Jeffrey Arnold attempted to cause harm. That was the fundamental factual issue in this case. Did Jeffrey Arnold cause or attempt to cause harm? And even taking out Justice French pointed out that you take out all of Lester's testimony, his written statement, there is still sufficient grounds to sustain this conviction, even though that is not an issue before this court. It was not raised here.
That is the issue. I mean, whether we're going to reverse this conviction based on the fact that the father made statements after he wanted to be take advantage of a Fifth Amendment right. I mean, that's what we're here for. It's not whether, I mean, if the judge needs, a refresher on how to deal with Fifth Amendment witnesses who propose Fifth Amendment, or every member of the judiciary needs that, take Mr. Arnold's statement out of the equation. There still was sufficient evidence here to convict him. The mother, the police, the neighbor, everybody was available to carry the burden on showing. So this is kind of a red herring in the way I'm looking at it, is that this does not affect the quality of the conviction.
I agree, Chief Justice, that in the final analysis of this case, taking all of that out, taking all of Lester's statements and written statement out, which were consistent with other pieces of evidence, that he was not worried about self-incrimination. Yes, Your Honor is absolutely correct. We can be sure that substantial justice was done in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honors. I would just note with regard to the what's called the expediency, there was also that at the end of the case, and my closing argument was interrupted by the court, and I said there was no evidence of any physical harm, and then the court says, which they're not required to do, and then I was trying to get to the elements of the offense. This is from the transcript, page 47, and the court basically mocks the defense. Are we going to talk in riddles, or are you going to, I mean, I understand what you're arguing for, but there's no requirement of a showing of physical harm. And this is an interruption to my closing argument. And rather than just remain silent and then make his decision, the court said no gushing blood, no broken bones, no gunshot wounds.
Was this a trial to the bench or the jury?
No, this was a trial to the bench with the court interrupting my closing argument at the end, basically taking this almost a prosecutorial stance toward my closing argument.
When we haven't advanced that as a proposition of law, have you?
I've numbered on proposition of law number two that Mr. Arnold, Jeffrey Arnold, was denied a fair trial by the trial court prejudicially, I'm presuming.
And that's what you think the prejudice is the injection by the trial court into the...
Well, I think it's endemic throughout the trial, and even the court, the dissent in the appellate case indicated the entire tenor of this trial demands a reversal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement, gentlemen, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marsha, we call a recess.